This is the Employment Law Show.
And welcome to it. It's the Wednesday night edition. We're back. We're ready to go. John Scholes, Chris Justice is here this evening from Sanfiru Tumarkin LLP. Chris has been on the show many times, and he's on it right now for the next hour for your convenience. help@employmentlawyer.ca is the email address, and anytime you would like, the website that's free for you to use, pocketemploymentlawyer.ca. Take the severance calculator out for a spin because it's free on that website as well, pocketemploymentlawyer.ca. A couple different topics over the half hour. Frustration of employment, that's coming up. And if we got time, how to preserve your workplace rights, that and your phone calls. But Chris, let's get started, pal, with the case of the day, the week that was. What do you want to talk about?
Yeah, this time I was going to talk about some news regarding closure of some operations. In particular, one story that came out was that Metro had announced it's going to be closing a distribution center next month, one out in Ottawa. And this closure is going to result, of course, in a lot of employees losing their jobs or possible changes happening to their jobs as far as maybe the location of where they work changing since the closure would happen. And so this has sort of led to more questions about what the company's obligations are, what the employee rights are in a situation like this if the employment shuts down, and whether these employees are entitled to any severance. But before I get into possible severance from the end of one's employment, there are still situations where there's closures and then employees are told that they need to relocate, that we've got another business or warehouse or distribution center in a different location, that it's going to require maybe an extra commute or maybe a little more time as far as commuting to work, but that the employer is expecting the employee to go to this new location. And in some cases, actually, you could be talking about a one-way commute time added on as far as an hour or two extra. And when it comes to locations that are sort of that far out or that may require that much more time, employees just need to know that they may have an opportunity to tell the employer they refuse to relocate and that they would rather get packaged out, or that they're treating this like a termination if the employer refuses. But in cases where maybe the location isn't as far away and everything else is the same as far as your employment's concerned, employees may be on the hook to have to kind of go along with that plan of action from the employer. But there's also situations where you simply just lose your job as a result of a business closure. And a lot of people think that maybe they're not out as much or anything, but that's actually not true. Your employer is still going to have to pay you your full severance pay. And not just the bare minimum, but your full common law severance pay, even if the reason for letting you go was in good faith or due to maybe some financial difficulties of the employer. Doesn't matter. You know, if you're let go, you lose your job, you're going to be owed your severance. And in fact, the economy might be depressed to the extent that you could get more severance in certain right. situations where the economy is particularly down. Courts have often found it fit to give people an extra month or two or three. So either way, if you lose your job, you definitely want to get some legal advice. You want to make sure you get a proper package. Or if you're being faced with some sort of proposal of relocating, you want to make sure as well that you have a leg to stand on before you respond back to your employer. But yeah, I thought this was a key opportunity to kind of bring this up because this kind of stuff happens all the time. You know, closures, businesses shutting down, and people are coming to me on a daily basis wondering what their rights or their entitlements are.
Yeah, the relocation thing is an interesting piece too, because, you know, as you mentioned before, it's not so much distance, it's more of how it affects the individual employee. Like if you're taking if we work mm-hmm. in the same place, you got to take three buses and I drive, that change in location yeah. might not really affect me so much, but it might kill your commute. It might add, like you said, an extra hour and a half, or it might add an extra 10 minutes to me, you know, so it's up to the individual for sure. Assuming that this whole distribution thing you're talking about is not a union setting, then it doesn't matter. But I mean, if it does, a lot to think about yeah. going forward. Did the, you know, and I've asked you this before as well, if it is a case where they're not, well, they're shutting down this distribution center, perhaps they're moving people or assuming people are going to go to the new one, and maybe it's within mm-hmm. striking distance for commute, but you're thinking, I don't know if I really want to make that commute every day. Can I try it out for a while? Yeah. Can I, in writing, tell the boss I'm going to try this out for 2 or 3 weeks because it's really inconvenient? And at that point, I'll let you know if it's copacetic with me.
Yeah, absolutely. There can be situations where, like you say, sort of in good faith, maybe on a temporary basis at least, trying something out, maybe you don't know the full extent of how big of an impact it'll have on you unless you actually, you know, go through with it. Maybe on the map, it shows that you're relatively within close distance. But yeah, like you say, it takes forever just getting, you know, down the block. Well, then that could, you know, tell a different story. It's not always just, oh, here's the kilometers extra that are being added on, and calculating it as easy as that. Like you say, there might be multiple buses or multiple costs incurred, or maybe you've got to rejig some things in your life as far as some family obligation you have or childcare commitment sort of thing is going on. So there's a lot of things to consider. And I think if an employee is willing to sort of maybe try it out to see, and then afterwards, you know, if their suspicions are confirmed, they might have more leverage, in fact, to say to their employer, look, I've actually tried this out and I can verify that it is a big difference for me. But then on the flip side, if it ends up not being so, then they may not have as much leverage. But I think there are those cases where you can try things out. But like you say, John, you want to be sure to sort of clarify that it's sort of a temporary thing. You're going to try it out. And by no means does it mean you're going to agree to this as being a, you know, a new permanent term of your employment.
Okay, frustration of employment. Let's get to a couple of these before we break. Number one, what is that definition of frustration of employment? And maybe a couple examples. Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, so frustration of employment or frustration of contract, it's a phrase actually in my practice that's come up a little more recently than in the past. And it essentially happens when the employment relationship, so you've got, say, an employee and an employer, they've got a relationship. Maybe, you know, you sign up to do a certain job and they pay you in exchange for that job. But that relationship ends up sort of ending due to circumstances that are outside the control of you or the employer. So in other words, something happens and now there's no reasonable likelihood that you're going to return to work as an employee in that role within a reasonable period of time. And so if this happens, you know, you can't come back, there's no reasonable likelihood of you coming back due to this unforeseen situation, the performance of that contract or that relationship is now rendered impossible. You know, it's become frustrated in essence. So that's what it's meant by frustration of contract. And some of the more main examples of what a frustration happens, what that can kind of include are things like maybe you've got into a car accident, maybe you've sustained an injury, or you've got some sort of illness. It could be debilitating, but it's something that may not have been foreseen at the time you signed up to do the job you're doing, but nonetheless has rendered you incapable of doing your job. Then stuff like that could be an example. Or maybe there could be a fire that destroys the entire business that you're working for. And maybe, again, it's an unforeseen situation. It just completely demolishes the building and the employer is kind of left in a terrible situation. That might also be a situation where frustration has occurred just for different reasons, but nonetheless still sort of outside the control of either party.
With that, we'll get into a short break into your phone calls. William, stand by. We're getting to you first, pal. And we continue just getting warmed up here. The Wednesday night edition Employment Law Show continues. Hang in there.
Welcome back to the Employment Law Show.
Yeah, we're back at 643 Schools here with Chris Justice and Firu Tamark and LLP. After the show or anytime, really, reach out to Chris and his team if you got questions or something you want to discuss at greater length, 1-855-821-5900, help@employmentlawyer.ca. The email you're free to use anytime as well. William, thank you so much for hanging on through the break, pal. Good evening. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, man. What's up?
Well, recently employed about 2.5 years, sales commission plus a salary earnings excess of $100,000 for last year. I noticed the vacation pay and statutory holiday pay wasn't being paid to me, and I went to my employer and asked him if he could look into it, that I believe I was owed that additional money, and he fired me 9 days later, and I sit unemployed as I call your show.
Wow. So, yeah, clearly some red flags there. I mean, you bring up the fact you bring up the issue of vacation pay and stat holiday not being paid. And this is something that isn't uncommon. I've definitely seen situations, whether it's because of the employer's just ignorance on how to do things or some more underhanded ulterior motive type thing.
It was originally underhanded in the sense that he was withholding wages, and it was during the discovery of that I contacted the Employment Standards Act, and he gave me the download of the the rights that I have. When I approached him, it was very civil and very, can you look into it, please? Because I understand, you know, this, I'm entitled to this. And he didn't say anything. And then, like I said, Thursday last week, he called me. He told me he was upset that he wasn't making as much money as he should. And told me I was out of work. I was done. This is our first payroll today. And I didn't receive any record of employment, separation slip, vacation pay, all 2 weeks notice, and nothing. I received nothing.
Yeah, look, I mean, there's a whole host of issues. Now you're bringing up maybe this is a pattern of his conduct. And so all the more reason for the alarm bells to be going off, right? Obviously, if someone's not giving you wages or stat or holiday pay, that's going to be a violation of legislation, number one. Number two, you bring forward your concerns, you know, asserting your right to these things that you're owed under the legislation. And you then, lo and behold, a day or two or however long later, shortly after, you get let go. So now the question is, were you let go as a form of retaliation or reprisal for just simply bringing forward the fact that you hadn't been paid your bare minimum entitlements under law? And now all of a sudden, the employer not only has to worry about paying you your full severance, which even though you might have been a 2.5 year sales guy, you could be getting 3, 4, 5, 6 plus months of severance there. Now they've also got to deal with potential punitive or aggravated damages for violating maybe the Employment Standards Act, for you know, engaging in that reprisal or retaliation. So it seems like there's a lot going on here, but also a lot of things that need to be addressed, and which gives you, I think, a lot of rights and entitlements and options. So I would definitely recommend you give us a shout, set up a consultation. We can kind of talk you through it in greater detail and, you know, get what you're rightfully owed.
Do you charge for your consultations?
We do, in a lot of cases, have free consultations. So if you contact our office, get in touch with our intake team, they'll kind of give you a confirmation on, you know, the consultation itself, any details around that, and then we can go from there. But we do a lot of free consultations.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thanks, William. Appreciate the reach out, pal. Here is the number to get a hold of Chris and company. If you haven't got it already, you probably do. 1-855-821-5900 and help at employmentlawyer.ca. Ian, you are up next. Thanks for chilling out in the wings there for a minute, pal. How are you?
Not by yourself, guys.
Good, sir. What's on your mind?
I'm just wondering if you guys can bring a lawsuit into the courts after the labor board for punitive damages, like severance pay, punitive damages, like withholding pay and all that. After the labor board, after a reprisal at the labor board.
So you're saying that you used to work for a company and they withheld your wages?
Yes.
And have you started a lawsuit or gotten in touch with a lawyer already about that?
I have, but they abandoned it, so I did it on my own at the labor board, and now it's gone through a reconsideration, which I know I'm going to win, and there's been other employees now that they want to file a class action lawsuit for wages being held and no severance pay whatsoever.
Well, I mean, I will say in general, again, if your employer is withholding wages or in some way violating the employment standards legislation, that's certainly a lot of times something we can help out with. I will say that we engage for the most part with non-unionized employees. So I'm not sure if you're coming from
a non-union perspective.
Okay. Well, yeah, if you've already commenced a process through the labor board and you need some assistance or maybe want a lawyer to kind of jump in and carry the matter for the rest of the way, then definitely give us a shout. At the very least, we can kind of give you an idea of what that path looks like for you and how best we may be of help.
Ian, appreciate the call, man. You know how to reach out with that number. You still got lots of time here to call us as well, 416-870-6400. Frustration of contract, frustration of employment is what we're talking about. Who has to prove frustration occurred?
Yeah, so in I would say in most cases when there is this issue of frustration, you know, your employment relationship comes to an end because you can't perform the contract. In most cases, it ends up being the employer, the company that reaches out to you at some point and says, look, you know, there's no reasonable likelihood of you going back. And so we're going to have to sever ties. and we're going to have to let you go. But specifically because of frustration. And so in most cases, it's actually the employer that attempts to initiate that process. Whether they're actually successful or have a good argument to make is another question entirely. But I think people also need to know that the employee themselves, the individual, the one who's maybe off work with an illness or a disability, they can also be the one to assert frustration and use that almost as a sword and sort of take the initiative in that sense. Again, if they can make out frustration as having happened, you know, there's no reasonable likelihood of coming back. So it actually is a process that can be initiated by either side. It just happens that most of the time it's the company that's looking to sever the ties. And then, you know, the employee will call me up and sort of figure out what exactly does this mean? What are the consequences of frustration?
So what happens if my contract with whatever employer has been frustrated? What's the steps after that? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if the company is the one that's coming to you saying, look, the employment's been frustrated. And again, assuming they have a solid basis for claiming frustration, then that will allow them the ability to let you go, even if you're, you know, not at work, maybe you're still off on a leave of absence, and only pay you your bare minimum entitlements under employment standards legislation. So it's one of those rare exceptions where they can let you go and they don't necessarily have to pay you your full common law rights, but they do need to prove that frustration is present. And again, if they can, then, you know, the Employment Standards Act, for example, in Ontario, it can allow for up to 34 weeks of severance and notice pay being offered for longer service employees. So that's potentially the maximum benefit that the legislation would allow for. But again, if you're the individual and you want to start the frustration process and maybe get some severance, even if it's not a full common law package, you can also go down that path and assert frustration and at least have your employer give you those entitlements under that legislation.
It's interesting. You mentioned, you know, bare minimum severance or whatever for the employer. That mm-hmm. seems something that would be kind of attractive. So does that in turn, do you find employers pulling the trigger too early on frustration of contract when they really haven't built up enough to call it that?
Yeah. Yeah. I think in a lot of cases where this happens is in the context of someone who may have got into an accident or had right. an injury or an illness that's kept them off work. And when these sort of situations arise, I look at it mainly from a couple different perspectives. Number one, how long have they been off? Because if somebody's only off for 6 months or a year or even 2 or 3 years, it doesn't necessarily mean that the employer can say, okay, we've met our obligations here. We've waited long enough. It is more of a case by case basis. But the length of time someone's off is one factor. And then the prognosis is another big factor. So if I'm off for a couple or a few years, but my doctor's yeah. saying at that point that I'm reasonably speaking going to come back, well, the employer can't simply say I've waited long enough, I'm letting you go. But on the other hand, if I'm away from the office for 5 years and at the 5-year mark, my doctor's saying there's no hope at all that I will yeah. ever return to my job. Done. Then that's a bit more of a different story. Yeah. And it's going to be easier to assert a frustration case, but harder for you to kind of push back. But it still is a concern because a lot of employers I find do actually jump the gun or they're a bit hasty and they're just looking for maybe a low payout. Whereas, you know, they only have to give someone 34 weeks, but in that sort of normal common law setting, that person could get upwards of 2 years. So I am looking for that as far as, you know, is this happening because they're trying to save a penny or two? Or is this an actual legitimate situation of frustration?
You still got some time here to call with your questions. It could be your own topic, whatever's irking you at work. How about that? 416-870-6400. I want to get to an email before we switch gears here. Joseph says, Chris, mm-hmm. I've been working for my employer on a fully remote basis ever since the onset of COVID-19, the pandemic. Now they're asking me to come back into the office 5 days a week. Do I have to agree to their demands or can I seek severance?
Yeah, so it's a good question. It's a good topic to bring up because when the pandemic first hit, a lot of us were working from home.
Yep.
And there came a point in time where, the pandemic was quote unquote over, where things had subsided, where the risks, you know, at least from what the government was saying, weren't anywhere near as high. And we saw a lot of employers actually call employees back, maybe a year or two after the onset of the pandemic, but there's also situations where people still haven't been called back. And you could argue that it would have been safe for the employers to call them back maybe a year or two ago, and yet they're still working remotely or in some sort of hybrid situation. And yet they're now being asked to come back. We're getting a lot of calls from people where they're being told to come back into the office, you know, full time or part time. And the employee doesn't want to. They want to either stay working from home or, you know, potentially just exit the scenario and get paid out. And I think they have a legitimate ground to say that, because, like I say, it's one thing to call people back right when things were sort of over and subsiding. But now I find that employers, if they're still having people work from home, they've simply waited too long. And I think that if they're going to insist now that someone come back, an employee may have the right to say no and insist on their severance and treat that like a termination. But I will also say that if you're in a situation like this, maybe you've been working from home for the last 4 years, and now you're being asked to come back, and you just so happen to sign something in writing that says, you know, I'm working from home, but the employer has the right to call me back later on, especially if it's in writing, then maybe the employer has a leg to stand on. But if that wasn't the case when you first went off and started working from home, I think in a lot of these cases, employers have simply waited too long, and now it is a term of their employment, the employee that is, to work from home. So if you're in a situation like Joseph, for sure, you want to give us a call before you start communicating with your employer. But yeah, it's different now than it was.
Yeah, that's interesting. The clock's kind of run out on them. It's been too long, right? That's because I remember when everyone had to go back. Now it's like, yeah, you sat back too long and waited, employer. So people might be able to stay home doing what they're doing. We don't have time to get into our next topic, but I do have enough time for our emails. So we got a couple minutes here. Roman says, guys, after a few years on the job, my employer is asking me to sign a new employment agreement. I'm not sure why they're asking me all of a sudden to sign something, but I'm being pressured to sign. What should I do?
Yeah, so another scenario where my alarm bells are going off, you know, something I encounter still a lot even today. Someone's on the job many years, and they're asked to sign some contract, and it's a 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 page contract. And they look at it, and it looks pretty much the same. There's no real change in terms of how much they're getting paid or their duties or their job. But then they also don't really think much of it, and they just go ahead and sign it. And they don't realize that maybe at page 6, there's some fine sort of language, fine print, so to speak, that says, you know, if we let you go, we don't have to pay you as much as we did before, or something along those lines. And you don't even think of it. You sign it. And now all of a sudden, because maybe you got a $200 signing bonus for signing the papers, you've got a benefit, and now they can benefit from these this fine print or these little clauses that they snuck in there. And, you know, had you not signed it, and had there been no contract like that in play and you get let go, you'd be looking at probably your full severance. But I've found there are far too many scenarios where people are signing things midway through their job, and then they get let go, and then their employer, you know, attempts to rely on what they signed, and, you know, to their benefit, to the tune of tens of thousands of dollars. And now the employee is just incredibly frustrated. And I'm having to tell them, well, look, you know, you signed this thing 2 years ago. They gave you a little, you know, 5 cent raise or something an hour. That's enough to say you got something out of it. And now you can't really go back after signing it. So it's just a huge red flag for Roman. Or anyone else, you want to give us a call before you sign anything, especially this fully fledged sort of employment contract.
Appreciate it, Roman. Thank you for listening. Appreciate your phone calls as well. We are done for the day. Back in tomorrow, though. In the meantime, reaching Chris and the team. Here's how it's done. 1-855-821-5900. help@employmentlawyer.ca through email, and the website anytime, of course, with contact information and the severance calculator. How about that? pocketemploymentlawyer.ca. We'll talk to you tomorrow night again right here on the Employment Law Show. Enjoy your evening.
The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Corus Entertainment.